Loki had yet more children, a giantess in Jotunheim, Heit Angerboda. With her he begat three horrible brood. The first was Fenris, the wolf. The second, Jormungand, that is, the Midgard serpent. And the third, Hel. When the gods knew that these three children were being fostered in Jotunheim, and were aware of the prophecies that much woe and misfortune would thence come to them, and considering that much evil might be looked for from them on their mother's side, and still more on their father's, all fathers sent some of the gods to take the children and bring them to him. When they came to him, he threw the serpent into the deep sea which surrounds all lands. There waxed the serpent so that he lies in the midst of the ocean, surrounds all the earth, and bites his own tail.
Monster crazy!
Welcome, everybody, to Monster Crazy, the number one monster podcast on the internet and ever, even all the way back to the BC times, all the way back even 100,000, 100 million years before even the birth of Christ. This was the number one monster podcast.
Yep. And in the future, too, because it went so far back that it loops around because time's a circle.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking a lot about circles today, because today we're talking about the circle monster.
And shapes.
Yeah, and my name is Circle Cameron, and I'm really excited to get into circles, and if we have enough time, we might even make it to squares today, but we might have to leave that off for next week.
Yeah, and my name is Circle Kai. we're just a couple circle guys. No, we're just kidding. We're pulling your leg, of which this thing might not have, but in some depictions does. It's Jormungandr, the world serpent.
Mm-hmm, from Norse mythology, but we will be spinning the wheel of shapes at the end of the episode to see what shape monster we're doing. The
shapes
next.
Podcast would have been almost as cool as Monster
Shapes
Crazy.
Crazy. Oh my god, we should start a spinoff called Shapes Crazy. Everyone, we just talk about shapes every episode.
Talking about which color looks best on which shape.
Oh my god, that's the best idea I've ever heard. Shapes Crazy. And the cover art is a bunch of shapes.
Just on a white background.
All right, today we're talking about the triangle.
Yeah.
And there's basically unlimited episodes you can do, because you get through circles, squares, triangles. You're like, oh boy, what am I going to do next? And then it's like, okay, how about flower shape?
Uh-huh.
You know, what about tree shape? There's a lot of shapes you don't think of
shape.
As being shapes.
Pen
exactly.
Shape.
Scissor shape. Pen shape. Basically, everything has a shape. There's probably even more shapes than there are monsters.
I would say that's unlikely. There are a lot of monsters.
Yeah, I guess you're
there's,
probably right.
There's more
I guess
monsters
you're probably
than shapes.
It's a good thing we did Monster Crazy instead of Shape Crazy. We might have run out of episodes.
Yeah, but that being said, shapes are cool and unlimited.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll be doing a small shape segment every episode from now on.
First, we should probably describe the physical description of a triangle. It has three sides.
It can be red, blue, yellow, or any other color. Or even no color at all.
Yeah, that's true. I'm having trouble dropping this.
I know. I really am stuck on this.
I want to go start talking about the Midland Serpent, and then I just keep thinking about a square or a circle.
One of the triangle's abilities is that it actually has the ability to, its internal angles always add up to 180, which is really fascinating.
Yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, who came up with that? So how do you think of something like
this
that?
This is more of like a in general shapes thing as opposed to a specific triangle thing. But would you agree that like the most classic three shapes are triangle, square, and circle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are the main shapes. And then PlayStation was like, an X.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's not a shape, that's a letter.
Lines
are letter
shapes.
Crazy would also be a really good yeah,
numbers crazy.
I think Sesame Street already did Numbers Crazy.
Yeah, that's true. Did they do shapes in Sesame Street?
No, they've never had any shapes.
Fuck. Okay, well, let's start talking about the Midgard Serpent, who was a circle.
Yes.
So, the Midgard Serpent is a serpent of unusual size in Norse mythology with divine origins, as you heard in the beautiful intro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a giant snake slash dragon, depending on what mm-hmm. depiction you're looking at. And it's in the ocean, and it goes all the way around the earth, and he has his tail in his mouth.
Yeah.
Visually, it's interesting. A lot of the later art of him, like more recent from like, you know, like the 1900s and shit, when, you know, non-contemporary art is definitely very sea serpent-y and very dragon-y.
Mm-hmm.
That's all very scaly and reptilian. But a lot of the more contemporary art, which I think also is even not contemporary, I'm not sure. Like, there's this one painting that keeps showing up that's from the 17th century, which I think is well after they're mostly got converted to Christianity and Norse paganism was kind of dying out. But it looks like very mammalian. Like, he has like hair and he looks almost like he has like a yak's head. Do you know the picture I'm talking about? It's the one where the ox head is coming down on a fishing line. Yeah, I'll put it on Twitter so everyone can see it too. But also some of the like runestones and art I was looking at too that's older, he kind of looks like a dog a little bit.
I think he looks really sick like that. But
I think it looks very cool.
Also, even the stuff where he looks just like a sea serpent or just a plain old snake that's too big. There was some discourse. Someone was asking if Jormungandr counts as a dragon, and I think like even the interpretations of Jormungandr as just a giant snake, I think he, in my book, that's still just a dragon because he's like a sentient snake that's really, really big. That's the son of a god. I feel like that at that point you're like, that's still just a dragon.
Yeah.
That you're splitting
what
hairs.
I'm curious about, which I guess I probably should have researched this. I didn't really think about the serpent versus dragon question, but I know that there are also dragons in Norse mythology. Like Nidhogg, I think, is the dragon that chews at the roots of the world tree. And I'm curious if there's a if they're referred to in the same way,
I think probably distinction there in Norse mythology. I think that Jormungandr stands alone as like, I think like, you know, his snake shape was, I think like from what I was gathering, reading the prose Edda, is that like all of the divine things love to change shapes all the time. And it's just like, he was a snake a lot of the time, but in one of them, he's a cat.
Here's something I just discovered when I was just looking up to try and figure out, because also I knew Fafnir was another Nordic dragon, and it looks like dragon and serpent is interchangeable here.
Okay.
It says that in the Prose Edda, the dragons are specified as serpents alongside Jormungand.
I think
it might be fairly
The same
interchangeable
thing. Okay,
yeah,
but he seems like a special one. I mean, because he's divine.
Jormungandr is he's the one. I mean, he's the world serpent. He's a special thing just in general, I think. But as to the dragon question, I think he is a dragon if you count the other ones as dragons too, which I think you would.
Totally. I guess what he looks like varies a lot. But basically a snake that's so big that he wraps around the entire world.
Yeah, and has his tail in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to find the oldest illustration I can of Jormungandr. I really am fascinated by him kind of looking mammal-y in the older stuff.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I feel like a lot of the current art is very like, you know, the deviant artification of the myth, where it's like, he looks like a Mortal Kombat cutscene or something. Looks like a Devil May Cry enemy, where it seems like to me some of the older art is a lot weirder and more interesting.
I think he's cooler, weirder.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And he also has legs in a lot of the old art. That's the other thing. A lot of the newer stuff, he is just straight up, he's the anaconda from the movie Anaconda. But in a lot of the old art, he's got four little legs that hang off of him.
So one thing that I couldn't super suss out from the Prose Edda, basically treats him as a giant animal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he was like a being? Like, do you think he was like a a guy in a, like, do you know what I mean by that? Like, was he a, was he sentient, or was he just sort of a
I
giant
think all
beast?
Of the monsters are sentient. Okay. I think.
His siblings were sentient.
Yeah, I think he is sentient, but he doesn't, especially because he's arch enemy. He has an arch enemy, which we'll get into.
Yeah.
But I think in general, I guess a lot. I might be talking out of my ass. I think in general, Norse mythology is very like animist. Like, I think they just think everything has spirits or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think that they even would believe that animals are kind of sentient in a way, though I'm not 100% sure, but
okay,
I believe,
well,
that is
that makes sense, that tracks. Also,
case.
I think just following the fact that his two siblings, Hel and the fox one,
Fenrir,
what? Yeah, are like I read
or Fenris.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Is it an S or R? I can't remember.
I think it was Fenrir, but they both like were involved in like stories where they were like active thinking, speaking participants.
Yeah.
And I feel like it'd be fucked up if Loki just had three like Titan like children and two of them were like sentient and one of them was just like on par with the other three, but just because it was so big, and otherwise
yeah.
it was just a dumb ancient beast.
Yeah. We brought up the Prosetta, just so people know the Prosetta is a book. It's like kind of like a textbook about Norse mythology that was written by this guy, Snorri.
Yeah.
Snorri Sturluson. And it was written in like the 13th century. And what's interesting, so it's kind of like, it's where a lot of what we know about Norse mythology comes from. But also, I think at that point in the 13th century, that was kind of like the death throes of that mythology. Like,
it was.
The Viking Age was kind of well over by that point. So that's, it's all, and I think stuff, it like, I think that I'm not a historian, but I think also that a lot of the Norse mythology stuff happened when people were not super literate. So it's kind of unclear, you know, how much of what's in the Prosetta is actually what people day-to-day believed
what Snorri wanted.
Or how much of it, yeah, what Snorri wanted them, or how much is influenced by, you know, like, Christianity and other stuff, you know what I mean? So, but this is where we get a lot of the information about Norse mythology, is from this, a magical book.
Yeah. Also, I read the magical book, the Prosetta, for this. It's a pretty quick read, and also it's not very like it's not very dry. Like, it's pretty easy to read. But Norse mythology is cool as fuck.
Yeah.
It all started with Ymir, who is just like a crazy king giant that was then like turned into the land and the sky, and like he turned into everything after he got killed.
Yeah.
But they all thought that we're living in his skull, which is really cool. And the sky is just the inside of his skull.
It's so fucking sick. Norse mythology is very, very cool.
Yeah.
Ymir, like, his death creating all life is also, I think, that one of the major themes of Norse mythology is like life from death and duality and cycles and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, also, I think Ymir was created by poison dripping, and that builds, I think, or something's created by poison at the beginning. I didn't brush up on, but there's a special type of poison called like I have no idea how to pronounce this word, but it's EITR. But that's also the kind of poison that Jormungandr like can spit and spew. So it's like this poison that created the world also will eventually destroy the world.
Very cool.
And I think Jormungandr is like kind of almost the embodiment of the whole like duality cycle thing, because we'll get to exactly why, but also he straight up is an Ouroboros.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just he's very symbolic of that just general trend in this mythology, I think. Yeah. Also, the name Jormungandr, Jormun means something huge, and Gondr can mean like a ton of stuff, but usually means either supernatural creatures or elongated entities, long things. So it can mean like a tree or penis or like just sure. like anything that's long. So
it's funny to just have a word
like big
for
long thing,
an elongated thing. Yeah, that's awesome. Oh yeah, some kind of gonder that I found.
Yeah, some big long. There's yeah, big long thing.
I like to put a gonder inside of a hot dog bun and put ketchup on it and eat it. Hot dogs are a kind of gonder.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so should we start with his creation? He's the son of the I wanted to say bastard child, but he's just the child of Loki and an ogress. I forgot her
name. A Jotun woman named Angerboda.
Mm-hmm.
Botha or Boda or some combination of those two sounds, I think.
Yeah, and so she was a giant, kind of. So another thing that was interesting is there's a lot of giants in Norse mythology, but giant is just the closest translation that we have to it. Giants were just like a mythical species in Norse mythology that weren't necessarily just like a person, but bigger. They were like...
Yeah. And they're called Jotuns.
Yeah, Jotuns. So, like, some of them are, like, actually huge. Some of them are, like, the same. Like, their sizes vary greatly, but they just have, like, you know, cool magic powers and shit going on with them.
Yeah, they're just, like, a type of being. Like,
yeah.
That's also, that's, this is a lot of Norse mythology is the building blocks for a ton of, like, modern fantasy, because J.R.R. Tolkien super heavily drew on it for Lord of the Rings, and that's one of the things I think where you can really see Norse mythology's influence is the idea that there are like races, like there's like, okay, there's humans and there's elves and there's dwarves and stuff, because in Norse mythology there are like gods are one thing and they're like different types of gods, and then there's like the Jotuns and there's dwarves and stuff, and it's all that. Yeah, it's there's so Jotuns are just kind of like a race. A fantasy race,
they're
I guess,
fantasy
is the way
race,
to think of
but
them.
But I think that they're on a fantasy on race that are kind of on par with gods in a lot of ways.
Yeah, like they're almost, and they're like older than gods too. That's the other thing, like because the first thing was a giant Jotun, and the gods had to kill him.
They killed him, and then in his death, his blood flowing everywhere drowned all the other giants except for like two that escaped and were like the giant Adam and Eve. But it's interesting learning about how the giants don't just mean like a big guy. Cause I think in my head, when I think of giants, I kind of, I'm just thinking of like, I don't know, D&D hill giants or whatever, or like, even if it's cooler, like I don't imagine them as like kind of godlike. And these things are sort of like other gods a little bit, but, they were super cool.
Yeah.
So
I think also it's sometimes translated as troll too. You'll see that a lot
or ogre.
Yeah, we just don't really have a word for what they are in English.
Yeah, but they seem sick as fuck.
Very cool.
So Loki and this giantess had three children together. It was Hel, Fenrir, and Jormungandr. And Hel, while we're talking about it, you know, there's not an insane amount to talk about with Jormungandr, so we might as well talk about his bro and sis.
Yeah.
But his sister, her name is Hel, H-E-L, and she was sent to be the ruler of the afterlife, like Hel. And she looks sick, I think. She, like, looks like half like a beautiful lady, and then the other half of her looks like... like a Draugr from Skyrim, or like a skeleton. Like she's like half normal lady and half like death.
Yeah. She's all of the three evil siblings are so cool. I think it's such a perfect encapsulation of like, these are the three scary things, is like an evil woman, a snake and a wolf. Those are the three evil things.
Especially if you're like a guy in 851, not 1851. Yeah. You're a guy in 851 who's cold on a boat, and the three scariest things you can imagine is an evil lady, a wolf, and a water serpent.
And the thing is, they're completely right. Those maybe aren't the still the three scariest things, but they're the three cool things.
Yeah, they are the three cool. Everything is one of them, kind of.
Yeah.
But yeah. Also, upon their birth, in Norse mythology, I forgot what they're called, but there's essentially like it's a common trope in mythological stuff. There's like three fates, kind of like three like wise women, and they tell the gods that these three children will be the undoing of everything. They will bring upon the apocalypse, which is called Ragnarok in Norse mythology. Fenrir, he's a giant wolf. He's like a huge wolf.
Yeah.
That's actually so badass. Just a giant wolf. That's sick.
It's so sick. I was obsessed with Fenrir when I was a kid. I thought he was so cool. But yeah, then Odin, who's the ruler of the Norse gods, he takes Jormungandr and he throws him into the ocean. He's like, get out of here. I'm done with you. Mm-hmm. He throws him in the ocean. But then Jormungandr grows big enough to surround the entire earth, which is called Midgard. And he bites his own tail. And then it's basically prophesied that when Jormungandr releases his tail, that is the earth will shake, and that's the signal that Ragnarok has begun. And when Ragnarok happens, Fenrir will come and like eat the sun or something, and then Jormungandr will spray his poison onto the earth, the same poison that created the world, and also the waves will crash and destroy and everything, and then Hel does something too that I can't remember.
I think what Fenrir does is he literally opens his mouth wide enough, like, so that the bottom of his mouth is on the land and the top of his mouth is above the sky, and then he just runs across, and also this is a flat earth, by the way.
Yeah.
And he just runs across and eats the whole, like, the sky and the land as he runs, which is really, really fucking sick.
And then one other, Jormungandr will also die in Ragnarok. And before we explain who kills him and why, we'll have to go back a little bit, record scratch, and let's talk a little bit about what happens in between.
Sure.
But Jormungandr's mortal enemy, arch enemy, is Thor, mm-hmm. who I'm sure everybody's heard of Thor, the god of thunder. And there are a few myths about Thor coming into conflict with Jormungandr in various ways. And you were texting me, it is very funny that they are mortal enemies. It's such an uneven matchup.
Yeah, like...
just appearance-wise, at least.
I think it's more, maybe not power level-wise, but appearance-wise, it's just like... it's cool for Thor to be like, oh, I'm so pissed off. My mortal enemy is an unfathomably large serpent. But like for Jormungandr,
and also like he's the one that holds the world together. Like,
yeah,
he's like, and this is like he like is the earth.
And then Jormungandr's mortal enemy in turn is like a dot.
Yeah, like, a little ant.
I mean, a little ant he should be afraid of, but, you know, like,
it's so funny that Thor is, like, all the myths are, like, Thor's, like, either knowingly or unknowingly, he's going to be, like, I'm going to fucking kill Jormungandr. I'm going to hit him with my hammer. He's going to fucking die. And then everyone's, like, stop. If you hit him too hard, you're going to end the world. Please don't do this. And then some way or another, Thor doesn't kill him. And it's, like, yeah, that's what I thought. Like, I know. It's just so funny that he hates this serpent so much that will literally end the world if he carries out his beef, but he just can't stop.
Also, it's not, like, fully... I read a story that is not from the Prose Edda, so I, like, it was supposedly Norse mythology, but I think it was also, like, I think someone extrapolated a long time ago off of the Prose Edda, but essentially his beef with Jormungandr is that he will eventually be the end of the world. It's not necessarily personal. It's like he wants to be... Thor wants to be a hero who stops... you know, the end of the world from happening. Jormungandr gets into the ocean because at first they have Loki's three children caged, and they wanted to get rid of Jormungandr by plunging him to the depths of the ocean while still caged, but Thor like accidentally lets him out. And then Odin just like does a Mario spin and grabs him by the tail and throws him into the ocean, not in his cage. Yeah.
And that's another, that's speaking of monsters in cages, that's another big theme of Norse mythology in general, is the idea of the, what they call the bound monster, where it, they don't really defeat any of the monsters or evil guys. They kind of have to seal them away with the knowledge that when Ragnarok comes, every monster that they thought they defeated is going to come back and take revenge. And so it's a, that's, it's a lot of stuff like that where it's like, okay, we can't kill these, we can't kill these evil children, but we can send hell to the underworld and we can send the Midgard serpent to under the ocean and stuff, but someday they are going to come back and they are going to wreak havoc.
Fenrir was they enlisted dwarves who are in Norse mythology, dwarves are like magically gifted blacksmiths, and they built like I forgot what they're called, but basically like chains that are tethered to something. They like they tethered the wolf.
Yeah, it's all stuff like that. There's a bunch of stuff like that, which is very cool. But yeah, so one of the the Thor myth that I like with Jormungandr is where Thor is like, he's in a drinking contest with this Jotun whose name is Utgard Loki, who is not Loki. It's a different guy who's just also named Loki.
Yeah.
Which is very funny. He's like a king, I think. And I think he's a Jotun. But he's like in a drinking contest. And,
he is a Jotun.
Yeah, he's being magically tricked. He can't finish his drink and everyone's laughing at him. And everyone's going, ah, ha, ha, you suck at this. You're a horrible drinker, Thor. And Thor's getting really mad. And then Utgard Loki is like, oh, so you failed that one. Well, let's try this. Surely this will be easier for you. All you have to do is lift this cat off the ground. And Thor's like, okay. And he goes to lift the cat off the ground and he lifts him really high, but his body goes up, but his paws stay on the ground. Like, you know, in a cat, you pick up a cat and it droops. And he's doing that and he's lifting it higher and higher and he's getting really pissed off. And he lifts it even higher and one of the cat's paws leave the ground. And then Thor puts the cat down and everyone's like, oh my God, it's a good thing you didn't lift that cat all the way, because actually that cat was Jormungandr in disguise, and if you had lifted him all the way, it would have ended the world, and all you caused a giant earthquake when you lifted one of his paws off the ground. Like, we didn't even think you could do that.
They were just fucking with him. In a lot of these Thor stories that I was reading in the prose edda, Thor seems like kind of a dope.
Yeah. I think he is. I think a lot of the gods are kind of fallible in different ways in Norse mythology, which I don't know if that's, I feel like that's in a lot of stuff too, maybe. But yeah, I think Thor is like, you know, like a drinking, fighting man, who seems to get fooled a bunch and has a hot head.
Yeah. Another,
he's also a member of the Avengers.
Yeah, he is a member of the Avengers. I feel like, honestly, they did a pretty decent job taking what Thor is in Norse mythology and making him that. Like, that Thor in the Marvel movies, after reading the prose edda and reading a bunch of other stories, like, that does kind of track, actually.
I just hate that what they did to Norse mythology. It's so lame.
I'm not making an argument that Marvel was good for Norse mythology. I'm just saying that I think that their representation of Thor seems like they nailed his personality pretty well. Also, another thing, I think most layman's experience with Norse mythology is driven a little bit by Marvel right now. And another little thing, that Loki is not Thor's brother. He's more like his uncle.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. It's, or like, maybe even like step uncle. Like, Loki is more related to, more direct, like, is kind of siblings with, Odin. And so,
okay.
Jormungandr is Thor's cousin.
That's even funnier.
And also, he was born after Thor, so that's his little cousin. Man, what if your little cousin was the world serpent?
And you hate him. You want to fucking kill him. You hate his guts. He's so annoying. You're like, turn down the iPad. Mm-mm. Oh my god. Or I'm going to lift you off the ground.
Yeah, dude, the world serpent raises its massive head out of the ocean and to ask if you have games on your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. But another story with Thor and Jormungandr when they meet again is Thor is fishing with a giant named Hymir, and it was funny. They like were just fishing, and like the book casually mentioned that they're like they're catching like whales, because yeah. that makes sense that that's like what gods and giants are fishing for, I guess. But when I was reading that, it was funny to imagine Thor in a boat with just a huge giant, and they're catching. Where do they put the whales? They catch him and then what? But then Thor takes a strong line, and then they start to drift into more uncharted waters, right?
Not to enter, I was just thinking, I think that they may have even been whaling in like Scandinavia back then. They may have, like, humans may have been catching whales.
Okay. That makes sense, but the idea of them fishing for whales as opposed to whaling
is funny. That's true.
Him and Hymir and Thor were starting to wade in you know waters that Hymir was uncomfortable with, and Thor was like, "Why?" And Hymir started like talking about rumors that he'd heard of a giant serpent, and Thor's face grew pink with rage as he thought about his little cousin lurking beneath the waves, and so he. Baits a giant, presumably a giant fishing rod with an ox head, and Jormungandr bites, and then they have an epic battle, and Hymir gets scared. Right before Thor grabs his hammer to bonk Jormungandr on the head, ending his tyranny of the water, the giant cuts the line because he's so scared. And also because I think Thor like just really wants to kill this thing, and everyone else pretty much knows that that like will prematurely bring on the apocalypse.
Yeah, and I think it's also one of those things where it's like destiny is like ensuring itself or whatever, because that's another big Norse mythology thing is destiny, and the whole the destiny of, spoiler alert, Thor and Jormungandr's destiny is to be killed by each other in Ragnarok. So every time that like. So basically, every time that is not going to happen, somehow it's ensured that that will happen in the future.
Sure.
Whether it's through someone being cowardly or illusion magic or whatever.
There's always something.
Yeah, exactly. And then so the big climactic finale, when Jormungandr comes on land in Ragnarok and Thor comes to fight him. This is so cool. Thor kills Jormungandr with his hammer. He hits him and kills him. And then Thor takes 9 steps, and then he succumbs to the poison from Jormungandr, and he also dies.
That's super sick.
9 steps is so cool. Specifying the number of steps.
That's super badass.
Yeah, it is.
This is not Thor crazy, it's Jormungandr crazy, but one other thing I wanted to mention just about Thor in these stories, so he seems like kind of adult, but also there is one story where he seemed like such a fucking asshole. He like I want to say this just because as an aside, because it doesn't paint a flattering picture of Thor. He comes down to Earth, I forgot what he was doing, but he from Asgard he goes to Midgard, and then he is like taken in by a farmer and his family, and Thor has 2 magical goats that I guess they don't specify this, but it seems like you can like kill and eat his goats, and then as long as the bones and furs are intact, they like come back. And so
I would love some goats like that.
Yeah. So he kills and eats his 2 magical goats and invites the farmer and his family to eat with him, and so they're all eating it, and then one of the farmer's sons like breaks one of the goat's bones and sucks out the marrow, and then they lay the bones down to like turn back into his magic goats, and he notices that one of his magic goats has like a limp, and it's because his leg is fractured, And he immediately, like, the farmer starts, like, wailing and, like, begging for his, because he realized, like, you know, he's just, like, fucked with a god's, like, goat. And so, like, the I'm just imagining this scene of, like, this entire family just shrieking and crying and begging for mercy as Thor, like, you can see the divine rage in his eyes. And then Thor is struck by how, like, pitiful they look and how afraid they are of him. And he feels very merciful. And he's like, don't worry. Like, actually, instead, I will just take both of your children to be my slaves until they die. And then they do. And they don't really get brought up again, but Thor just also has two human slaves that were the farmer's children's the farmer's children that he spared so graciously.
Yeah, I mean, that I think the Vikings did a lot of pretty horrible things.
Yeah, I guess. Wasn't like...
It's very funny, though, yeah.
I wasn't surprised to hear that, and I feel like if I was a Viking who was used to just constantly horrible stuff being done to me and me doing to onto others, I would think that that was an act of incredible mercy from a god. But, I don't know. I just think it's fairly funny to be like, oh, don't worry. Actually, yeah. I will just take your children as slaves until they die.
Yeah, it's really funny.
And I think the point of that story was to highlight his, like, characteristics as a merciful guy.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, I just think that's funny. That's not very generous in my book.
No. The thing that I was thinking about with Jormungandr, which it's something that's really fascinating. I really thought there was going to be a lot more just source material in general, but I guess, yeah, they just didn't know. They just weren't into writing when a lot of this stuff was going down.
Yeah.
And also a lot of it, yeah, like a lot of even the history of this stuff was written by Christians who, like, were recording the religion that they were getting rid of, basically. So, you know, a lot of it, it's very, and then also there's like another whole corrupting influence where, you know, the elephant in the room, of course, is that the Nazis fucking loved Norse mythology. And so I feel like there's just a lot of stink in a lot of directions on all this stuff, and it's hard to kind of figure out what. It's just so interesting that we just don't really know, I think, a lot of what was going on with this stuff back in the day.
It's it's a really cool worldview. I interrupted. Finish your point.
No, I just think it's just really, it's just fascinating that there really isn't that much source material, and we don't really know where a lot of this came from or how it developed or when it developed even.
Yeah. I think the general idea was that this mythology was being built in the 800s to the 1200s, but I'm not positive about that. But something that I was going to say is, you know, Norse mythology comes from a time when religion sought not just to, like, lay down ethical, well, it, like, really wasn't laying down ethical ways to live or do a lot of the things that religion does now. It was serving to specifically describe the world and, like, come up with essentially a story of why things happen, which I always think is cool. And so Jormungandr is apparently responsible for earthquakes and ocean storms. And that's when he's stirring. Like, he's still being an Ouroboros. Like, he's still biting his own tail and lying mostly dormant. But just, like, when he shifts in his dormancy, that causes these things. And the idea that's your explanation of why that's happening, like, I think it speaks to, like, how Vikings must have felt just so completely at the whims of the horrible truths of just nature. And, like, you know, like, in Norse mythology, there aren't really things that are, like, there's not, like, gods are, like, we should create humans and love them and we care about it's all just, like, basically these hyper-powered things having their own shit going on, and humans are like a little speck that lives in between that, that no one is paying attention to. So like their reality is living at the whims of just these unstoppable forces, which of course was true. They were, you know, and I just think that that is such an insane reality to live in. I'm not sure like how literally the Vikings believed in this stuff necessarily, or if it was just stories they told because, but assuming they did, or at least some of them truly believed that this is really literally what was happening, and there literally was a serpent that, like, the way that Midgard is, like, the way, like, the map of this is that Midgard is in the center, basically an island in the center, and that's the whole world. And then there is an unfathomable ocean around it, and then around that, holding that ocean together, is the Ouroboros of Jormungandr. So if your reality walking around in your little huts and shit is just that there is a snake that is that big that when it moves, you can, like, you know, earthquakes happen and ships sink. That's a wild reality. And I think it's, I think it would be cool if people still,
I mean, I think that is how the world still works. You know, we, it's not like, I mean, not to get all annoying, but it's not like, oh, in the year 2020 we discovered absolute truth or whatever.
That was my follow-up, you know, point, actually.
Shit, yeah, like there's a lot of stuff that we don't know, and there's a lot of stuff we think we know right now that we'll find out that we're wrong about. And people are always the same. Just because we have Google now doesn't mean that you process information all that differently from someone who was around in the year 800.
No.
We just have different sources that we draw from. And I mean, functionally, it's not even that different, I think, because, like, not to say that the moon is not real, but we are not going to go to the moon personally. And
no.
We look up at the sky and we see a little circle and we say, that's a giant rock. And functionally, is that really that different from saying there's a big snake? You know, even if there is a big rock, it's not like I'm ever going to see it
as
a rock.
That was actually my follow-up point, was I wasn't trying to say that we have a more advanced understanding, really, because fundamentally, you know, it's like, okay, why do earthquakes happen? Now we suspect that it's tectonic plates rubbing against each other or whatever. But why does that, like, if you ask why enough times over and over again, you will eventually realize that you don't really know what's going on. And, like, it's the same thing where people are just saying things to try to figure out why anything is happening. And it's like, I don't know, scientists learning about waves that tell you how far away a rock is. Like, I don't know. At a certain point, you really just don't know why.
It's exactly the same. I think, it's the same. I think it's the same function as mythology.
It's the exact same function as mythology, but mythology was, like, and also I think it has the same level of, like, purpose. I mean, like, okay, so maybe you find out that it's pretty likely that the moon is, you know, fucking 10,000 trillion miles away or whatever. Like, what does that accomplish? Like, what are you going to do with all that? I feel like with these really big unanswerable questions, like, why. And this is also potentially a very stupid thing that I'm saying, and people can feel free to be like, Kai, that was really dumb, and here's why. But, like, with these really big unanswerable questions of, like, why does it rain, or why does anything big happen, it's like, it feels like, in some ways, almost a waste of time, where it's just like, why can't you just let it rain, you know?
Yeah. I think it's also, like, you know, a lot of stuff that may be completely true, you believe it because somebody said it to you who'd figured it out, or who someone who read that someone figured out said it to you.
I thought that Ting Tings were faking their British accent for a long time, and I would tell people that as a fun fact whenever I heard "That's Not My Name" come on somewhere. I'd be like, you know, they're not actually from England. And someone was like, really? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, where'd you hear that? And I was like, I don't remember. And then we looked it up and it wasn't true. So, you know, that was relevant.
But even stuff on a big, like, physics level, I don't know. Like, not to say, like, nothing, everything we know is wrong or some, like, or like, oh my God, we're all lied to. We're all sheep or whatever. But just really, the point is, I think functionally, I don't think you can really see yourself as all that different from someone from like the Dark Ages or whatever. There's Dark Ages and there's Illuminated Ages, but you know, I think it's the same stupid bullshit where people are like, if you showed this to a Victorian peasant child, they would explode, and it's like a song that was made with computers, and it's like, well, yeah, if you showed yourself, if you got shown something from 300 years from now, you'd probably also turn schizophrenic. Like, well, I don't, it's not because I nobody mean, also yeah if people it, aren't like stupider
in,
I think.
In reverse, if I would also explode if I was teleported to the year 800 and I watched two men who smelled like shit kill each other with a rock. I mean, like, yeah. It's, I don't think that the world became, the world is more stimulating in a lot of ways, but also, like, I don't know. I think you are really right that at the end of the day, things aren't really that different.
Yeah, the world is different, but I don't think people are that different.
Mm-hmm. The biggest argument yeah. I do have against the things that I was just saying is about, like, why you should try to figure anything about anything out is, I feel like people were able to figure out that climate change is happening and primarily we're responsible for it because they were asking that kind of, they were like, why is the rain sour? And that is maybe like tangible, you know, good that came out of someone trying to figure out why something's happening. But I do think that ultimately trying to figure out those really, really big questions, you kind of come back to the same place.
Hmm. Yeah, if we could get to another, I'm going to go into another level of dumb guy-ness mm-hmm. here.
This is a safe space for dumb guys.
Something really fascinating to me about Jormungandr is that it's an Ouroboros, which is a snake that's eating its tail, of course. And I think Ouroboros means like tail eater in Greek or something. But this, and so this is a dumb guy thing because I don't know shit about how mythologies influence each other or how they relate to each other, and I know that that's a thing that people do know, so please tell me the answer or if I'm off base here, but so many different cultures and different people have come up with the Ouroboros, and it is such an incredibly like meaningful symbol. You can kind of it is just the thing where, like, so I looked it up. The first Ouroboros that they're aware of is from ancient Egypt, it's the 13th century BC, and that's a long time ago, and that's before Jormungandr. And I don't know whether it's like, oh, somehow the Norse people were aware of this symbol in some way from this other older culture, and influenced their idea of Jormungandr, or if they were just also like a snake with its tail and its mouth is a meaningful symbol, which I think is also that seems very plausible. It does seem like the kind of thing that a bunch of people would come up with. Because it is so, it's the loop, it's cycles, and we all love cycles. That's what mm-hmm. patterns and cycles. But I think that it is also so crazy to think about, like, just the snake as a snake is always like something so crazy. It's an Ouroboros in Norse mythology. It's like it surrounds the world is the world in like Christianity and in the Bible and shit. It's the devil, you know, and it's all, and I just think it's so interesting. And I was talking to, Pierce was talking to me about this. Well, shout out Pierce. I'm sure a lot of people know who Pierce is, but if not, you should check out Pierce's stuff. He's the best. But at Cringe Genius on Twitter, shout out. But that the snake really is a snake is like the one of the ultimate ancestral enemies of humanity, because that's the thing, that's the danger when you're a monkey and you're evolving to come down out of the trees. The snake is the thing that you're exposing yourself to. That's the thing that kills you when you go to the ground. And that's like the reason, that's like the snake is like the that we a lot of our pattern seeking behavior is because so we can recognize what a snake is versus a stick.
Yeah.
And that becoming the symbol that it just keeps coming up over and over in mythology is so
a snake being symbolically so tied to life and death is mm-hmm. makes an incredible amount of sense when you think about how life and death it would be to be a monkey that's walking around looking for a mushy apple on the ground and you get whipped in the ankle by something and then all of a sudden you don't feel so good. It totally makes sense that they are an animal that is representative of that.
Yeah. And it's also, yeah, it's like the, I mean, not to get back to shape crazy, but it's like the circle. The circle is the magical shape. That's the thing that we see it and we love it and we think it's crazy and incredible. And the snake is the animal that can be a circle. The circle is the sun. It's fruit. It's an apple. Not that we knew this back when however long ago, but it's the planet. And then the animal that is our primal enemy, that's also the devil, is the one that can make our beautiful circle.
I think.
And just, it's pretty interesting. I don't know. It's fun.
It is fun. I also, I agree with that assessment in general. But I also think that when we were talking about an Ouroboros is just a meaningful thing that people would just kind of all around the world create. I feel like at some point, for some circumstance, a snake has done an Ouroboros. It's happened.
Oh yeah, I looked this. There are some snakes that are known to eat themselves. That it's happened
From the tail.
I believe so.
Well, even if they weren't specifically doing that, I'm sure. I don't know. People and animals do random shit all the time for whatever reason. I'm sure. Imagine.
Yeah. I'm seeing pictures of it right now. They do. There are snakes that do it.
So if you saw a natural Ouroboros, I feel like. And especially with the context of viewing snakes in this way of being creatures of death, just seeing one in that perfect circle. I feel like people didn't go, oh, wouldn't it be crazy if a snake did this? I think someone probably was walking through the woods and in a little sunlit clearing just saw that in the ground and was like, oh, that probably means something.
That's a miracle. Yeah, yeah. That's something incredible.
If I saw that in the woods, I would be like, I'd be tripped out.
Yeah, I think that is a supernatural experience.
Mm-hmm. I would love to see, or maybe hate to see, an Ouroboros in real life, just by happenstance.
I think I would completely freak out. I think I would lose my mind.
Yeah, I would definitely. Oh, I don't know what I would do. Yeah, okay, Cameron, let's just say, you are literally just walking in the woods on a hike and by yourself, and you see, just a normal, kind of harmless little snake, but, making a, I don't know. It's big enough that it's not, tiny. You just see an Ouroboros. Yeah. What do you, do?
Yeah, I think I would freak out. I think I would freak out.
I wouldn't run away from
mind.
It. I think I would. I would. I think.
I think it would shake my life.
I think it would shake my life too. But I think I would try to get some meaning out of it. I would I don't know, look around or something. See if there's anything else weird.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I would do in the moment, but I think it would affect me a lot for a long time.
I think what's. When Vikings were around and being Vikings, they spent a lot more time in uninhabited places than we do, which makes sense because they were mostly in places that felt uninhabited, other than their little I don't know, had a lot more exposure to wildlife, and
just was more wildlife around everywhere back then too.
There also was more, but I have to imagine it would be impossible not to see symbolism if every day you were constantly face to face with wildlife.
Totally. I mean, yeah, I think that that's the reason why people don't have fucking Aztec, I saw an eagle eating a snake on a cactus and I built my city there anymore, is because now all the landscape is human made, and a human made thing isn't an interesting symbol. It doesn't matter. You don't see something that somebody made. I mean, maybe like a painting, I guess, and have like a, oh my God, this is a sign from God.
Yeah.
Because it's not, because it's the sign from literally the, it's the only thing that isn't a sign from God.
But like, it would be, if I were a guy and I was walking around in the woods and I just saw like a dying fox nursing pups by a bush, I'd be like, that must be like, that's God or something. Like, like I would think everything was symbolic constantly.
Yeah, no, that is, I think that's also, that's probably, I would imagine, besides, well, maybe besides science existing, but I would imagine that's a lot of the reason that there isn't so much of, like, you know, kind of esoteric animist mythology stuff that's around, is because there's just, I think there's just not that much opportunity that you can take in meaning like that.
Science,
a lot
is
of it,
the fucking
a lot of
nerdiest
it feels
religion.
Polluted. Like, I don't know. That's the other thing, is if I saw an if I was walking down the street and I saw an Ouroboros, I'd be like, somebody did that.
Yeah,
whose
totally.
Snake is that?
You saw a rat Ouroboros, and I'd be like, oh, that rat's sick.
Yeah. I don't know. But I think that's neither here nor there. But that's neither here nor there. And now I think we can move on to our shape of the week.
Okay.
Which is a circle.
Yeah. Much like
circles
the
Ouroboros. Circles are round.
Yeah.
And they look like a snake biting its tail, is what I have to say.
Do you want to know something else that's interesting about a circle?
Yeah.
I'll tell you in 1 second. Okay. 3.14159265358937932384646.
Is that the number of circles there are in the world?
2643383279.
What is that? Is that how round it is?
That is how round it is.
Oh,
it's pi. which I also kind of forgot what pi is. I think it's
yeah, you had to Google it to get even the first digit.
I knew that it was 3.1. Yeah, I didn't know that it was 3.14. How many digits of pi, Cameron? How many digits of pi do you know right off the bat?
3.14159265. Is 3.5?
Yep. That's the first 10 digits of pi.
That's, I can't get further than that though.
Okay. Well, that's pretty good. But I'm looking.
I was a nerd,
Cameron. I'm looking at some digits right now that would blow your mind.
Yeah. Well, this isn't number crazy. We'll have to save that for our number crazy episode. Oh my God, Number Crazy and Shape Crazy did a collab. They did pi and circles.
Oh shoot, it didn't send. I just tried to send Cameron like a million digits of pi. But yeah, so circles, snakes, dragons.
Yeah, are we ready to rate Jormungandr? Or is there anything we should have brought up that we didn't?
I don't think so.
That you can think of?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, their truth is there really just isn't that much. Yeah, and that just that makes it almost more fun that I'm sure day to day everybody was also because there's no written shit from this time about this stuff. That also mean not only does that mean that we don't really know what was going on, but that also means that people during that time probably didn't know what was going on either.
Yeah.
It was probably very oral, I would imagine. I would imagine that everybody kind of had a different idea of what everything was. To some extent. So I bet if we could have kind of an information vacuum that we sent back in time and sucked up everything, I bet that this could be a 500 million hour long episode where we go, well, Jormungandr sometimes actually has ears, but some people say he doesn't have ears and
but
stuff like
everyone
that.
Everyone can always agree that Jormungandr likes to be a circle.
Yeah. But yeah, so anyway, it's kind of hard to give a rating, I guess.
Yeah. There's
not really sure what to do for that.
I'm going to do circle out of 10 serpents for Jormungandr.
Yeah, I'll do a circle out of circle because I don't really know. Yeah, it's not really a thing that even feels like a thing that I can attach a rating to. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like rating gravity as a monster or something.
Yeah, totally.
It doesn't really work.
It's a very cool concept, but I don't think it's quantifiable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can rate the modern incarnation. Like, I'm pretty sure he's in God of War. I think he's in Marvel Comics and stuff. And I'll give those a big fat one or two, because I don't care. Turning something that interesting into a big snake, which I'm not, you know, honestly, I'm not even familiar. Maybe they do something cool. But I'm willing to just be a hater and just lash out right now.
I know,
with no knowledge of what I'm talking
about.
In
God of War, Jormungandr is helpful to you. Because you're a god from a different pantheon, and you're trying to kill the whole Norse pantheon. So your interactions with Jormungandr are good, because Jormungandr hates Thor. He talks to you and helps you out. And also, another fun fact about the God of War 1, I didn't play the game, but he is 3 miles long in that
one. See, yeah, I'm okay. He can have a one or two. He can hold this one or two circles out of 10. But are you ready to spin the wheel of shapes?
Okay. I am.
I'm going to go ahead and spin it now. All right. And here we go. Are you ready?
I am ready. Oh, the wheel of the circle.
Oh, my God. Unicorns.
Woo! Nice. Cool, yeah, unicorns.
Unicorns. That's an interesting shape. I'm trying to think of what shape that is.
I mean, it's mostly horse-shaped.
Yeah, with a triangle on it.
Yeah.
It's horse plus triangle. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess next week we will do unicorns.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Bye.
Well, bye, everybody. And I guess also for this one especially, join the Discord. There's a link on Twitter. And if you have any specific unicorn incarnations or appearances in mythology or things from other media that you want us to look at or include or whatever, go ahead and throw those in the Monster Mail channel in the Discord, because this is obviously one that there is a trillion instances of in a lot of different mediums. So if there's anything you specifically want us to see that you think is cool, put it in there.
Just join the Discord in general. It's active. If you want to tell us how stupid we are for saying that we think that science is dumb, Discord's a great place to do it. It's a pretty active one. It's fun.
Yeah. But I think that wraps it up into a big circle.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I'll see you next time.
Bye.
Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Little Jackie Paper loved that rascal Puff and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fancy stuff. Oh, Puff the magic dragon.